You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Back in 2015, a TED Talk by radio show host Roman Mars went viral. Now, in that talk, Roman, whose podcast, 99% Invisible, looks for good and bad design elements all around us. So he tackled an issue he's particularly passionate about, city flags. Fewer things, he says, give him more joy than a well-designed flag. But then, at the end of that TED Talk, he presented the worst city flag in all of North America, as decided by flag design experts. And that city? Our very own Pocatello, Idaho. Pocatello, we should say, has a new design now, thanks to Roman's call out. But back in November, I got a chance to talk with Roman Mars about his new book, The 99% Invisible City, as well as the shame of the old Pocatello city flag.
Oh, Pocatello was so like sweet and game for that. When I met with them, everyone was so kind to me. They had no expectation that they would be, but they really took it in stride. They were good sports.
So for folks who haven't seen the Pocatello flag, the old one, we will have a photo up on our website if you're interested in looking at it, folks. So Roman, when did your TED Talk on good and bad city flag design, did you know that it would result in in that total redesign of Pocatello's city flag?
I didn't really think about it. And what's funny is it isn't just Pocatello. There's been about 200 flag redesigns since that talk.
Wow.
Like it was really like a call to action for a lot of cities. And the main thing was, is mostly, even the Pocatello flag, it was really a city branding symbol that was sort of, thoughtlessly put on a flag. It wasn't really like intended as a flag, which is one of the reasons why it was so bad. And it's so often the case that city flags aren't really intended, and they take the city seal or some kind of like, you know, random thing that represents the city, and they put it on a blue backdrop or a white backdrop, and they call that a flag. And the main thing that we did was, you know, sort of get people inspired to try out, using some flag design principles to make a flag as good as the country flags you see.
So, I mean, as we know, flags are one of your favorite ways of noticing design, but your podcast, 99% Invisible, is actually about the other design elements all around us. So I'm really curious, like what's something else that most people may not have thought of as design, you know, like flags?
Yeah, well, I mean, the show is called 99% Invisible because we tend to not notice good design that's around us. When things work, you know, we tend to pass them by without noticing. And it's only the bad design that we, you know, tend to notice. And so the show is about, you know, getting the stories behind, you know, good design and also just like the hidden design stories for things that we notice. So the things I like are... you know, I love a good sidewalk stamp that shows like the construction company that that laid down that patch of sidewalk. I really like thinking about curb cuts because those are not there, you know, by default. Like there was a group in Berkeley, California that made it so that there are on ramps onto sidewalks, and they fought really hard for it. And those spread across the U.S. thanks to their efforts. And cool little quirks. Like I like that the traffic light in Syracuse, New York has the green above the red because it's an Irish neighborhood and they didn't want unionist red over Republic green.
Stop it. That is hilarious.
And that's the type of thing that when our built environment, it can't help but reflect our values. And so I like using the built environment as a lens to look at, you know, who we are as people and what we value and what we think is important.
So have you always noticed these design elements? I mean, even back to, you know, to being a kid, I mean, you mentioned like the sidewalk stamps. Like I noticed those, but I've never thought like, oh, that's a great or not great design element.
You know, I don't know if I was astutely aware of them as kids. I mean, I didn't really travel much. So I always had to kind of look deeply at where I was rather than, you know, go far, you know, which I think is the case for a lot of people. And especially right now, you know, it's like, it's incumbent upon us to look deeply and find joy in the place where we are because we don't get a chance to, we're not like having a chance.
I've noticed everything in my, I've noticed everything in my neighborhood the last 7 months, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is like this book that we have, The 99% Invisible City, is like a travel guide for the moment when you can't travel, just to look at all the hidden stories that are in your neighborhood. And so I don't know if I was really attuned to those so much as a kid. It's sort of the thing that I trained myself over the course of being a journalist and then doing the show. Like, it's definitely, the show has definitely changed and rewired my brain in this way. And I think it's rewired the brain of the avid listeners of the show as well.
So, I mean, you know, so you've got your podcast, and so that, of course, tells stories through audio, right? What was it like then to have to, you know, let go of the medium of audio and then write a book? Was it a new challenge? I'm just curious, like, what that was like for you.
It was horrible. it was so hard, you know. You take something like, you've told stories for 20 years on the radio, and you write your voice on the radio. And you know, if it wasn't for Kirk Kolstad, the co-author, who's the digital director of the show and writes a bunch of stuff for the website, and he does so many things on the show, produces episodes and stuff, the show, the book wouldn't have, it wouldn't exist, you know. And right. And just like pushing it forward, and he thinks like a writer, and I think like a writer for audio. And it's a completely different skill set. Like, I thought I knew how to tell stories, and I had to just relearn and try new things, and you know, get rid of some of the crutches that I use in terms of the rhetoric, how I repeat things, how you, the way that the anecdote and reflection cycle of a radio narrative, all that sort of stuff. You just have to toss it all out the window because none of it works on the page. It's annoying on the page, you know? and so it was super hard. And the other part that was hard is, like, I do a weekly podcast, like a weekly show. It reaches, you know, hundreds of thousands, a million people a week. And if there's anything worse than having a big long deadline like a book, which takes years to finish, it's having a big long deadline like a book and also having a weekly deadline you have to complete at the same time. It was so hard.
So you mentioned the street lights in Syracuse, which I had no idea, and that sounds so fascinating. Is there an episode or maybe a story that you've told on your podcast that has stuck with you?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, the funny thing is that we've done 416 episodes of the show at this point. It's been on for 10 years. And I'm trying to think the ones that really, that I end up talking about the most. It's usually the thing that happens the most recent. So most recently we did a show about children's libraries. And there was a woman who basically invented the children's library. Her name was Ann Carroll Moore. She came to the New York Public Library at the turn of the 20th century, built up the idea of a children's reading room. And there was a notion at the time that reading was wasted on children. And these things that we think of as these public spaces where especially children are welcome and encouraged, the library was not a place for that until she invented it. And, you know, then later on in her life, she became kind of a totalitarian when it came to what was the acceptable children's book and which ones weren't. And there was a bunch of, you know, children's authors, including Margaret Wise Brown, who wrote Goodnight Moon, who just came to blows with Ann Carroll Moore. And, you know, I was just fascinated by this story that was reported by one of our producers, Joe Rosenberg. And it tells you, like, this whole hidden, rich history of a thing that you do not think of as having a dynamic and, you know, like, a fraught history as something like a children's library. But, you know, their stories are everywhere.
So unlike your podcast, I mean, as we talked about, I mean, pretty, you know, covers design. The book is a bit different and it focuses more on the city. So why switch the focus?
Well, the first thing was that sort of like, it has a lot of the stories from the show, but it has a bunch of that aren't. It's about 50-50. And I really wanted to, I'm a design fanatic. So I really wanted the book to exist for a reason. Like, it couldn't just be this deprecated translation of what the podcast is. And so this idea of a field guide was something that Kurt came up with. And I liked it, this idea that you would, you know, carry this book around with you, even though it's quite big.
What else do you have to do nowadays? You can carry it around.
Exactly. And you could use it to crack open all this accumulated knowledge of the show and the worldview. Because, like, you know, I can tell you the story of curb cuts in this book in a couple pages, and you can peruse it, and you can, you know, check it out, and you can flip through. But if you had to remember the time I did this show about that in 2017, and do you have 30 minutes to listen to it, and, you know, like, all that sort of stuff, like, it kind of was this, the format, you know, broke open all this knowledge and made it sort of accessible in a new way to reach new people. And so I just wanted to have a reason to exist. And this Guide to the City was the first kind of idea, you know, that made the most sense. I was never compelled to make a book about the show before. There's been numerous offers, but this was finally had a real reason to exist. And that's what we created.
And that was my October interview with podcast host Roman Mars. His new book, The 99% Invisible City, is out right now. So it is Friday. It is election week, since we still do not at this time have a result in the presidential election. So if you are listening to this at 8 p.m., that could have changed by now. But as of 12:57 on Friday, November 6th, that is still up in the air. I want to thank all of you, as always, for being a part of Idaho Matters, for engaging with us, for sending us questions, for listening every day. We really do appreciate it. If you have questions regarding our Doctor Roundtable, which happens every Wednesday, you can still get those in today and over the weekend. Just email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Our producers for Idaho Matters, Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. Our production assistant is Molly Wampler. A big thank you to Troy Oppie for helping out again today. Our general manager is Tom Michael, and our program director is Paul Stribling. Question for you. Have you downloaded our free Boise State Public Radio app yet? Well, you can use it to listen to this show live or listen back later by using the podcast feature. You can also talk to us. That's right. Use that feature. Send us a radio quality message with a question, a comment, or maybe even an idea for an upcoming show. Would love to hear your ideas. Again, thank you so much for being a part of Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday. I hope you find a little bit of joy in your weekend. And of course, we will see you back here on Monday.